Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Hello, hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello, hello.
Now, I have only had 4 hours sleep because I stayed up for the Game Awards. And so it's been a hell of a day. Spider-Man, we went to see Into Spider-Verse, and then the Avengers 4 trailer came out, and then we did the podcast and the reviews and all sorts of content all across the website
and
the YouTube.
And then we decided to do, we'll film the Game of the Year today.
We did film the Game of the Year as well, so that's out there as well. But for this podcast, we're going to break down the news that came out of the Video Game Awards, and we'll have a separate one for all the nominations and the awards themselves. So we might as well go with the first thing that came out of nowhere during the show, which is literally Jeff Keighley going, I don't think anyone knows what this is. Cut to a logo, the Nintendo Switch logo. As it turns out, the Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is real after all, and it's only on the Switch.
This was a roller coaster of emotions for me personally. I didn't know what to think because the news video, I think, is up at the time of at least when we're recording this.
It is.
And it's like a Nintendo Switch exclusive made by
Team Ninja.
Ninja, of all people. How?
So Team Ninja are the dudes that made Neo and Ninja Gaiden and Dead or Alive, and that awful Ninja Gaiden animated one that was just like completely bad.
Oh, yeah.
But they're now doing a Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Now, Rach, what do you think of such things?
I mean, any Switch exclusive is great, but I do sort of question the logic behind this one. It's like, if you're going to make a game a Switch exclusive that's not a Nintendo, you know, character game, at least have some kind of Switch gimmick, something that makes good use of the Switch. But why is this game on the Switch? Other than, which is what I can sort of say is probably the reason, is that they couldn't make it look good enough on the PS4 and the Xbox.
That is a very good
so
point.
So they sort of compromised and thought, it'll look okay on the Switch.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Even in the trailer, like even this initial footage does look quite ropey.
It does.
Very cartoony.
Very cartoony. The animations aren't necessarily very well polished. Honestly, I thought it was Marvel Heroes, which is the old like Steam PC-based Marvel top-down isometric combat thing. And I thought they were doing like a Switch version of that because the Switch seems to hoover up a lot of different ports. And then when they faded the logo in, I was like, really? This is Ultimate Alliance?
So many thoughts on this, right? First of all, the exclusivity thing, because I want to clear this up for once, because I know when it comes to the idea of exclusives and console holders having exclusives, I'm kind of for it because it creates games that you wouldn't see the third parties do. There's a reason story-driven single-player games are around, and that's because the big console owners have the funds to fund them and stuff. I'm fine with that. What I'm not entirely fine with is taking a series that was previously multi-platform and then making it exclusive. I can see, I know exactly why Nintendo have done it this time, because I genuinely don't think Ultimate Alliance would have been made if not for one of those big publishers, like at least helping out in its production. But for me,
our equipment is prone to fall apart, but it's okay.
We're all falling apart. I'm not sure. I don't think I like it.
I think it's a strange thing because, I mean, we've got Spider-Man's now exclusive to the PS4, obviously because of the way that Sony handled the rights. And it's just something as big as a Marvel property you assume to be available everywhere because the other two Ultimate Alliances were. So it's a strange choice to now suddenly, like, only put it on the Switch.
There were little Marvel games on the DS, if I recall correctly. And it's like, it's not like it's unheard of, but it's strange.
We'll see.
It looks like a mobile game.
It does look a little bit like a mobile game. That's why I kind of thought it was more like a Marvel Heroes thing. But I mean, some of the stuff gave me promise. They show some cutaway fatality style animations. It shows Wolverine gearing up to take off like this giant, what do you call those giant robots there in X-Men? Sentinel's head, and does that in lovely slow motion. Yeah. I was like, okay, if you're going to bring back the cutaway kills from the first Muir, then that's fine. But I hope that they do a bit more with it in terms of the presentation.
What do you think? Because I know, obviously, since Marvel are now on the gaming license again, and they're trying to bring things more in line with the MCU, the roster that we saw was very MCU-oriented, and the actual plot itself is about chasing down the Black Order and Thanos and getting the stones, you know what I mean?
Yeah, which obviously means that it was developed in tandem with at least the planning stages of Infinity War. But being a journalist for this website, or whatever the hell I am, the first thing I noticed was that Spider-Man in Ultimate Alliance 3 has the same gloves as in the preview shot from the set of Far From Home.
Is that
true? It's the black glove with the red fingers.
I thought it looked very MCU related. Yeah. I knew it wasn't the Homecoming suit, but I thought it looked very
I think it's a little blend. Okay. I think he's got the gloves from the new movie and the overall costumes kind of from the old one.
Yeah.
But they're obviously trying to tap into the ongoing MCU stuff, and we're yet to see what state Spider-Man's
in. It's for kids who are sort of into, you know, this sort of stuff.
I mean, I'm
well, kids, yeah. Okay, I didn't mean kids.
Kids at home.
And
kids.
Big kids. And
okay,
big.
The Switch is not just for kids. It's my favourite console, but what I'm saying is they're clearly aiming at the mass market.
Yes. And plus, the different graphic style is obviously to get around the rendering side of it too, because the first two games were way more polished and way more like asset heavy, whereas this thing is almost cel-shaded in the way that it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Let us move on to something else, which is a game called Ashen. Now, I forget this was first shown, but if you're a Souls fan, then Ashen is like the nearest thing to like a Souls adjacent game that is just, hey, if you want more Souls, you want to have that hit yet again, Ashen is that game, and they said it was available as of yesterday. So it's out on Xbox and PC.
Yeah.
Have you been following this thing?
Actually, no, I'm going to be completely honest. Seeing it this morning at the, you know, the, what'd you call it? Was the first
big old awards. Yes.
The rundown was the first that I've seen of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I am intrigued because it's obviously, like you said, very heavily influenced by Dark Souls. Mm. I actually see more of a Bloodborne kind of style to it because, do you know, there's a part in Bloodborne where there's a focus on bringing people back to like a safe haven,
mm-hmm.
taking them to this chapel. And it sort of reminded me of that. You're sort of escorting someone through this ridiculously beautiful, dank world, and I love it already.
Yeah, it's got this kind of like base building mechanic to it. Like they want you to, obviously that's the whole thing. You've seen a lot of the competition as far as Souls go, trying to think of different aspects to make their games unique. Like I love the gambling mechanic in Lords of the Fallen.
Yes.
You gamble whether you want to keep going, get a multiplier and bank your souls later on. And obviously they've realized that the bonfire, the safe space is like a big key component of a Souls game or like a game like that.
Yeah.
So they've built that out into its own mechanic, and that's a really cool thing.
Yes.
I can't think of the name of the game that was all melee driven that was like a Souls game. Name of the game, it was like from
Salt and Sanctuary?
No, it was something like Devolver, but I don't think it was called that. Doesn't matter.
Was it the roguelike one?
No, it was just like Souls, and I even played it, but it was a martial arts game anyway.
It's come out recently.
Yeah, and it was like you just punch and kick things, and you learned moves based on how they were done to you. You had to block them, and you would learn that move. And it's got like a dude with a white mask. It's called something like Devolver.
It's definitely
published by Devolver Digital. But either way, the art style that was in that game, it wasn't cel shaded, but it kind of had that like punchy, like, you know, very accentuated color palette. And I like that about Ashen as well, because obviously it's called Ashen, and it's playing on the Souls vibes, but it's way more colorful and more immediate.
Beautiful
and,
thing.
That's the thing. Yeah, the first thing I noticed about it was just how bloody beautifully haunting it was. Everything looks so lush, like the way it comes together. It's not the most colorful thing in the world, but it has something to it. It really does have a vibe to it that I really dig.
It almost reminds me of like Little Nightmares and Tearaway, like those type of styles. Like it looks brilliant.
I think ever since Fortnite kind of did the whole like cartoony, Overwatch as well, like that sort of cartoony graphic style, I think a lot of devs are looking to do that because it's less processor strain. You can kind of flatten out a lot of the textures, and it means that you get a way more like visual pop, which I guess still works on big TVs and stuff. So that thing looks cool. Next up is the remake of Crash Team Racing. Nitro Refueled. Now you'd think that I would have done a small backflip and burst at this point, but I don't actually care that much because I don't trust them to maintain the physics. Now, Crash Team Racing is one of my favourite games of all time, that's why I don't believe that they'll get it just right.
Scott, but never happy Tailford.
Happy Tailford.
I bought a 55-inch TV. I'm perfectly happy, thank you very much. But Crash Team Racing, the Nitro thingy, as soon as they showed the trailer and they cut from the old school PS1 graphics to the new one, and it just, it immediately I started thinking of the follow-ons that weren't made by Naughty Dog, and I was like, no one ever got it right again. I know you're going to say that they did, but no one ever got it right again. The last Naughty Dog CTR is the finest kart racing game ever made, and carry on.
But I understand that they might mess it up, because I know you really don't like the NCN trilogy because they messed up the jumping.
Yep.
No, it is the best game.
Terrible.
Last year.
Nah,
but,
didn't qualify.
So this... looks lush, Scott. It looks so good. And it does. Don't get the sort of pessimism behind it. I know it might not be perfect. It might not be the PlayStation 1 game, but no remake is ever going to be exactly the same. And do you not just get a little giddy at the fact that you're going to be able to play the best kart racer of all time, or at least a facsimile of the best kart racer
online.
Of all time.
Online.
Okay, so online, exactly, online.
That's what will probably patch it over. And the only thing is, it's not pessimistic. I just need to maintain expectations. Okay. Because it's not like remakes like maintain their old school physics. There's so many remakes that, you know, chop and change the source code, and, you know, it's not Naughty Dog. So you're trying it, it's a different dev team trying to match up to things. And like, Spyro played extremely well because it doesn't have to be very meticulous. I honestly thought they messed Crash up. I never got on board with the new way that he felt, my muscle memory was off, and okay. I've lived on Crash Team Racing since whenever, like 1999 or something. Okay. I've still got it on my Vita. I played it this morning, and so like I still have it everywhere.
Yeah.
And so for me, I need it to be exactly bang on with a reskin. Yeah. And anything other than that is just going to make me go. Ugh.
How do you think this is going to do? Because obviously we've had NSYNC Trilogy, we've had Spyro Reignited, but those
Medieval as well.
Medieval coming up, but those two packages of three different games have, in my opinion, a more nostalgic, widespread appeal than Crash Team Racing. Even though I love Crash Team Racing, I always thought it was a weird one back when it was rumored that it was going to be the next big Crash-related remaster, because a lot of people do like it, but it doesn't sort of seem to have the extended pull that the original games do. You know what I mean? You love it, gamers love it, but it's kind of a weird one in my opinion.
See, for me, I think it's the last one they can do that sits within that aura, where like it's the last one that Naughty Dog did before they left. You know, because then it was Crash Bash was kind of the last good Crash game, but that wasn't even then, that was Eurocom. And so for me, like, Crash Team Racing is the last good one that you can do, and I would argue that CTR is bigger than Medieval. Like, people know Dan Fortescue, but I think that they, nearly everybody played Crash Team Racing at like a friend's house or something.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, I would totally say that. I don't know how much of the old school PS1 games and stuff you're looking forward to in far as remakes and remasters and all those kind of things.
Well, what I can say is, if we look at how Crash was when it first came out, like you said, you weren't very impressed with how it controlled. I wasn't either. I'd rage quit it hard with many swear words. So many swear words. however, the Spyro remake, which, fair enough, like, I was much more excited for, was so well done.
It's beautiful.
It feels the same and yet, like, so much smoother and so much more infinitely, just so much better. So, going by that sort of, you know, that graph.
Yeah, that makes
Crash Team Racing is going to be okay.
Is it though?
It's going to be okay.
Don't let yourself get excited for things, man.
I do all the time. And then the hype deflates if you've not seen Mass Effect Andromeda. I mean, yeah, these... there was a time when that game looked promising.
When are we talking about BioWare, by the way?
We will talk about BioWare. That might be towards the end. That's the main event, but we'll get there soon.
Cool.
Okay, so another new game that was shown off is the next one from Supergiant. Now, these are the guys that did Transistor and Bastion and Pyre, which are all phenomenal games. And Supergiant are just a phenomenally creative and purely passionate force for creativity. I love every single thing that they've done, and I don't know if you guys have played everything they've done so far.
Not everything.
The hell. What are you, Rich?
I watched a playthrough of Bastion.
Good, that is better than anything before. So Bastion, I mean, their whole shtick is isometric top-down. It's almost Diablo-style, like hack and slashy gameplay,
with
a bit more to it.
All right.
Diablo's a totally fine product, and I recommend you check out the latest Chatty Faces. But for the sake of Hades, it seems like they've doubled down even more on that approach to the gameplay, because Pyre kind of went down this more sporty sort of route. You had the same like perspective, but you were trying to dunk this like orb.
Basketball.
Yeah, it's kind of like this like space basketball. It was great. Pyre is phenomenal. But yeah, Hades seems like it's way more just hack and slash, and you're leveling up your character and buying new abilities and stuff, which isn't as inventive as I'd like to see from them.
Well, you mentioned before we started recording that it's the engine is the same as their past games.
Well, it looks exactly
you a little bit.
Yeah, because I was like, oh god, you've already used it three times.
Right.
Like, it was it was the same engine, or it looked like the same engine in Bastion, Transistor, and Pyre.
Why fix what isn't broken?
I don't know, just to do something a bit different. But I guess that's kind of their thing. And a lot of this stuff with Transistor, the way that the combat was in that, was the same style of hack and slash that looks to be in Hades. So, at least they can kind of play to their strengths. Transistor had this whole thing where you freeze time, allocate where you want to hit, and then resume time, and you just kill everybody in like a great big blur. Like PS2 gem Alter Echo, which I guarantee me and three people will know.
Doesn't mean anything.
Probably not
that.
Even that, to be honest. I don't think either of you were born. But it was a thing. But Supergiant make nothing but lovely things, and I'm sure it'll come back around. Speaking of lovely things, kind of not at all, there's a new Far Cry called Far Cry New Dawn.
Where did that come from?
I don't know, to be honest. Did you know this was a thing?
Well, no.
Do you care?
February?
No.
Yeah, February.
It's February. Coming out. That is like, as of now, like, what, 3 months away?
Yeah.
Technically, you count December.
I mean, it's weird, right? Because the general art direction that they're going with is this post-apocalypse, but with hyper colors, lots of greens and purples, and lots of over-the-top characters. You would say it was Mad Max if not for the Rage 2 trailer. And so I don't think they've obviously, they haven't had the development time to look at that and pivot towards
clearly
it.
Clearly what it is because, I don't know, was Far Cry 5, I mean, obviously it did well, but I didn't think it did, like, massively well. I want to say because it's a direct sort of sequel almost, it's probably just like you know how Wolfenstein got the old blood, like,
yeah,
for example,
yeah,
like a sort of add-on, in my opinion, that's probably what it is.
Far Cry Primal was very, very soon after Far Cry 4, if I remember.
Oh, so it was, yeah.
And Blood Dragon was kind of 3's follow-up, and then we had Primal. I guess it's maybe just par for the course. I mean, they can get more money out of the same engine.
It looks fine. It looks all right. I'm actually quite a big defender of the Far Cry series. I thought Far Cry 5 played really well and was quite enjoyable. But my gears is that after Blood Dragon, they could have done anything they wanted. They could have gone as wacky as they wanted to, because that was like the proof of the pudding of that you could make Far Cry this kind of, you know, serious shooter, but then also spit it off into these crazy ideas. And they put out a survey asking fans what they wanted in the next sort of Far Cry. Do you want it to go back in time, like dinosaurs, alien stuff like that? Uh-huh.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon. And they have never quite capitalized on those ideas yet. I know the DLC for Far Cry 5 was wacky and you went to Mars and stuff, but to just do something as kind of basic and overdone as a post-apocalyptic shooter at this point just seems like you could do anything. We've got Rage 2 coming out next year. We don't need any more.
Plus, as well, I mean, if you're going to end up holding them side by side, which we obviously will next year, like Rage 2, developed by id Software, has the Doom style arena shooter, the sense of like insanely fast locomotion that's in that series. From that developer. And it's just like, as much as I like the Far Cry games, but I don't think that they play with anywhere near as much weight or pace or payoff or anything. And Far Cry 5 was like pushing that appeal to breaking point. I was like, this is just more of the same. Like, there's another crazy dictator. There's another set of collectibles is another one other. And I kind of burnt out on that straight away. So I don't know. I guess I'm curious to see what they do. But
people who love the series will be delighted, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of DLC, and plus the last game, Far Cry 5, had a whole creation suite, so there's a lot of different ways to play around with those elements. So another bigger deal is Obsidian's new project. Now, this is called The Outer Worlds. This is the thing that they're developing exclusively for the Xbox, and the thing that Microsoft allowed them to, you know, help put together and help to fund. So this is pretty much a series of fan dreams come true, because it's nigh on them making the next Fallout in all but name.
It's New Vegas meets Borderlands meets... Oh my goodness.
Starfield, and it's not even
Starfield.
Out yet.
Starfield, yeah, exactly.
I think, I mean, the way that they've gone about it, obviously the Fallout branding was front and center in the trailer. Obviously they're not Bethesda, but it literally says, from the original creators of Fallout, and then who brought you Fallout New Vegas?
I mean, they're not wrong.
No, they're not wrong, and that's the thing. And obviously, I mean, I remember when Microsoft bought Obsidian, I think we talked about it on one of the videos we did, about how they would use that front and center of the marketing, because that's how you get... There's an argument to be made that the Fallout fandom is primed to be taken from Bethesda, and it's about time that someone swooped in and said, here's everything you want Fallout to be. It's not 76 and it ain't Fallout 4. Here's this New Vegas follow-up with an actual dialogue system. So look, I want to see it.
I don't want to buy into the hype or sort of get a bit dramatic. But
what are you, me? Yes, you do.
I want this game to take me out. I want this game to wine and dine me. I want to show it a good time. I want it to be my lover, to be honest.
Recommend an album.
This trailer really genuinely blew me away. We've had the Avengers 4 trailer today and I've watched this like 5 times. It's everything you just said, like the Fallout fandom, if you will, have sort of... Waxed and waned. I need this space age, old west frontier style, weird RPG where you can do whatever you want. Because Obsidian have been doing great work for the past few years, but they haven't made a proper kind of AAA RPG in a long time. And now that they've been given sort of the ability to make...
Just a blank slate.
That's exactly what it is, a blank slate to kind of... Go nuts, do what they want. You've earned this. I just want it to succeed. I want it to succeed.
It's very, very good timing as well with 76 being like slashed in half in price. And
I mean, Bethesda aren't exactly in people's good books right now.
Sadly.
And so there's a lot to play on in as far as what they're not delivering to a core fan base. And Obsidian have always had the fan vote. People love New Vegas. So it's always like if they step to the plate kind of thing and say, hey, we've got this whole new IP. It's everything you want and more. Yeah. And we can bring new things to the table. For me, that solves everything.
Interesting that it's a multi-platformer release, though.
Unless I've been mistaken.
I'm sure at the end it said PlayStation 4.
That is interesting. I thought the whole crack was that Microsoft had bought them to make something for the Xbox.
This was in development before that deal was finalized. Oh. So I think their next game will be Microsoft exclusive, but this franchise looks like it's going to be...
Okay. Well, either way, it might be timed. Yeah, it might be timed. And plus, they're taking potential fandoms and money out of Bethesda's pockets, which should a long enough timeline make the next Fallout something special again.
Yeah, competition is good, you know.
Exactly, which kind of gets right back around to the way that we open things up. So, the next game from your favourite developer and mine, Hello Games, because I love No Man's Sky, yes I do, they've got a new thing coming called The Last Campfire. Now, I'm amazed that they had time to do anything else, but
you know what?
They have.
It does actually look adorable.
Yeah.
I love a good indie game. Journey. I love a good indie game. Mm-hmm. It does look adorable.
It's got kind of like a Journey-style art style. The characters have the same sort of like religious connotative like clothing, and I really like the look of that.
Yeah, very Journey. Did you ever play that one, Never Alone, with the girl and the fox?
Oh, I did.
It sort of almost reminded me of that, just in the sort of style.
There's a lot of, I can't think of, a million games come to mind, because it does sort of connote stuff like a Journey or like anything that's sort of this kind of adventure-heavy type stuff. And obviously it's called The Last Campfire, which harkens back to the Souls influence and the idea of the nice warmth of the fire being a checkpoint. I think it made quite a positive impression.
Not everything is like Dark Souls, Scott.
Maybe it is. Maybe it just is. And maybe the sooner we admit that, the better.
The Dark Souls of podcasts.
It might just be, which means it's wholesome and loved by many, so that's fine.
And also hated by many of you found out.
Like Hello Games. But either way, they've got another game coming called The Last Campfire, which is a complete deviation from what No Man's Sky is. We shall quickly herald the moving on, though, because Mortal Kombat 11 also got a trailer.
That trailer might be, well, not my favourite trailer, because the Obsidian game, but
it
was a good trailer. Yes. It was so brutal, it did nothing away.
See that coming.
To be fair, that was one of the leaks that we just knew was nigh on an announcement beforehand. But we didn't know what was going to happen with the roster. So the fact that they showed a new character who seems to be bending time and bringing in the old characters from the original two games, that's a great way to tap back into those older levels and remaster them. The same way they did in the 2011 one, which was just the story meant that they went back in time and whatever. So I'm way more up for them doing that and just like take those old school levels and make them new again. then.
Me exactly. It was just so fun, and I really enjoyed MK9. I didn't get into X as much as I wanted to.
I
to
thought
be
it was
honest.
A letdown. Yeah.
I thought it was too a little much bit of the as same. Well. Yeah, I'm with you. So I'm hoping they do something new and kind of push it forward. Mm. Like with Injustice in particular, I think they've gone from strength to strength, and they haven't sort of had that time to kind of not languish, but kind of, you know, peter out a little
I think
bit.
They can like reassess their strengths. I mean, like with Injustice, you had like a really great story mode. Obviously, it had a lot of characters and mythologies to play off, but the loot system was great. I really liked the way that thing played. It's so tight. And I think they did a lot of really good like power play, like, you know, set pieces and cutscenes and little things that sort of drop in during each fight. I love Injustice 2. I love many things. But I think that they can then apply that to Mortal Kombat. Like, for example, the loot system. Like, if I'm getting some big, like, Emperor-style Sub-Zero with massive shoulder pads and I can just go and dominate online, then that's a pretty good way for that franchise to go.
Character customization is a yes from me.
Yes.
Like every time.
And I think, I mean, the way that they did it in Injustice 2, obviously they had the loot boxes and that kind of stuff. It didn't feel exploitative. Like for me, I kind of thought that they balanced it pretty well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think if they carry that across into Mortal Kombat, that is another franchise prime to just pick different costumes and pieces from the last 25 years.
Love it.
And bring some stuff in.
My slight worry, because I guess I'm just the negative one on this podcast.
Yeah, what the hell, man?
Is the fact
just trying to
that,
have a good time.
Like you mentioned, the series has played with its history and past before, and it does it to great successes. But again, is it just going to be more of the same if we're going back in time? It really needs to shake it up for me, because it's a great concept, and if they kind of fumble it, I'll be slightly disappointed, but I'm going to be fanboying all over the place anyway.
I hope that because, I mean, NetherRealm are obviously the studio for Mortal Kombat, but because of the things that they've done in Injustice, they, like, you know, they know how to do super heroic fights, like, to a T, and they've always had gods and deities and demons and whatever in Mortal Kombat, but the general, like, scale of each fight was never really over the top. It was just sort of, like, punching, kicking you on the one plane.
Yes.
You're not taking to the skies or anything. I don't want anything too over the top, but in the Mortal Kombat versus DC game, they had that thing where if you both get knocked off the side of a level, you would punch each other in midair.
That was cool.
As you like fell down, and whoever got the advantage would like land properly, and then that would be the one that would like, you know, be able to carry the fight on, getting the advantage. And little bits like that carried more into Injustice than Mortal Kombat. So I'd like to see them put, you know, more things like that in.
Mortal Kombat versus DC was all right, you know.
It was fine, but it was so.
I
don't know. I think the last
game
time
of 2019,
alongside Crash Nitro Kart. I think I don't know. For me, I kind of just I want them to just not go back to the drawing board, but I want them to rethink about why do people love Mortal Kombat and not play it as safe as they did with MK10. And I kind of hope that they've killed the younger characters because I really need for them. They were fine. I mean, you didn't like Cassie Cage.
It's just
taking a selfie with a headless corpse.
I thought that was quite funny.
I'm kidding. I don't hate anyone. You know this, I don't hate anything.
It's true. You don't even Cassie Cage. But pugnacious little individual.
She's just a lady just doing her best. I can identify with
taking some selfies. But I think if they, to going forward, obviously they need to reassess the roster, reassess the way that people like responded to the new additions in MK10. And that's the thing. In the trailer, we've got Scorpion again, and Raiden's in there, and I forget who he's fighting, but like we've got the standard characters.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that their way of doing it is to bring the old school in, literally make it part of the plot and go, here's the thing you wanted, all right? Here it is. Here's literally Mortal Kombat 1 and 2. And so we'll kind of have to see how they go forward with that. So our biggest news of the thing, kinda, but something to end on, is Dragon Age 4. Now, I don't care, to be honest.
Do you not, Scott?
No,
what a surprise.
He says, you're the man not psyched for Mortal Kombat. But Dragon Age, I liked the first Dragon Age, didn't play 2, and then I played a lot of Inquisition and thought it was meh.
Right.
So you guys have assumedly played more Dragon Age
than
me.
Did you? I guess you didn't finish Inquisition then.
I didn't finish it, no.
Okay,
I liked all the factional warfare stuff. But did it get really good?
The teaser is very good because it relates to, I believe, the after credits scene after Inquisition, where a character that we know and love quite well sort of betrays us.
Is it that
us.
Big sexy bison man?
It's not.
Is he alive still?
Iron Bill.
No?
He can be if you play the DLC.
Okay.
What did you do to Iron Bill, Josh?
Iron Bill, that's the one. Iron Bull. So, okay, so when...
So it's very cryptic sort of trailer. I mean, I'm not the biggest Dragon Age, like, sort of nut.
Mm-hmm.
But so I don't really know what the whole dagger thing means, but I do know whose voice that is, and it is very exciting.
Okay. Is it a spoiler to say who it is?
I mean, it would be a shame if anyone hadn't finished Inquisition.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Okay,
yeah,
that's fine.
It's going to be tied in very closely to that game, put it that way.
How...
Worried.
I would like to be into Dragon Age more. I certainly played a hell of a lot of Inquisition. It was just that I didn't think the combat was especially
It's not the best combat, no. So with this one, hopefully they sort of, you know, take a look at that, maybe make it a bit more like one was, just a bit sort of simpler, in my opinion.
I like the idea of pausing the overhead cam and planning and everything, but it got a bit of a mess. Like, it needs refining, I think. But I'm a sucker for turn-based combat, so whatever. But, I mean, what do you guys think in terms of why they're dropping this now? Because Anthem was there too. Anthem was at the VGAs and they showed like a new chunk of gameplay.
I think they're dropping it now entirely because of Anthem. Although there are no doubt people looking forward to Anthem, that's such a big shift for BioWare as a whole. It's such a big shift for BioWare as a whole, I think. And they keep using the Dragon Age franchise as sort of being like, We've still got a thing that you like.
Do you remember that? Dragon Age is an apology.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, Rich.
Honestly, I don't think this game is anywhere close to being completed. The last time we heard of it, it was in the very early pre-production planning stages. Mm-hmm. And a rumor went around when it was leaked, because obviously it was leaked, said that it was at least 3 years off. And I fully believe that, because I feel like they're using this franchise as a way of, you're going to get some single-player great story-driven games that we know about.
Sorry to cut you off. No worries. It's probably similar to what Bethesda did, where they were like, 76. Oh, but by the way, Elder Scrolls 6 is coming.
Exactly.
So that's what BioWare are doing also.
It's a worthwhile PR tactic, because obviously Anthem isn't doing very well. And it's not like, I don't know anybody who's talking about it positively. The general sort of pre-order numbers apparently aren't very strong. And they have apparently signed a 10-year deal with EA. So, I don't really see that working very well. And I think that you can kind of tell that the whole idea of it, the project, was commissioned along the time when Destiny looked to be a good thing. And obviously Destiny's kind of gone by the wayside too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Anthem's kind of arriving in this weird post-loot shooter, post-microtransaction explosion, landscape. And I just don't see the appeal for it. So I kind of think they've gone, well, what else have we got that appeals to the true gamer or whatever? Mm-hmm. And their answer is Dragon Age, because they don't have a whole lot of other nascent franchises.
Yeah, that's...
Because it ain't KOTOR.
It's definitely...
Sadly
not. I'm not as down as on Anthem as you are.
I'm never that down. I'm just laying out the foundation. I'm reading the terrain.
Okay, then.
As Black Widow once said.
Go as bad as you say. I do think it might just die on its bum this post-microtransaction, post-loot box kind of world. But there is potential there to make it something special. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they do that, it is going to be a big risk and a big experiment. And it's nice at least to see that BioWare still have Dragon Age in their locker, so that if Anthem fails and is a bad endeavor, they've still got something to keep them alive.
It's very true. I will ask you one question to end this podcast. Do you know what the anthem is in Anthem?
It is Anthem Part 2 by Blink-182, isn't it?
No.
It is Anthem by Good Charlotte.
That's it, yeah.
I don't know.
But that is a thing that's
it. I don't want to be just like you.
I don't want to just be like me. But I also think... That we're like, what, 3 trailers in? And they just haven't, they've kind of said, the anthem's a really impressive thing, and it's changing the world. I'm like, what's the anthem? Apparently it's the world. It's a song.
Do you know what?
No.
Why don't we just relax? It's coming out in a couple of months.
We'll find out what it is.
It might be really good.
I feel so sorry for Casey Hudson and the crew, because I used to love Casey Hudson before Mass Effect 3. And I looked at him coming out during the VGAs and I was like, mate, this game is getting you down. You did not have the bags under your eyes last time I saw you. And it just kind of seems like these things are getting in the way of, I don't know, getting the game out in a more positive kind of light. But whatever.
I didn't have the bags under my eyes before starting this podcast.
No, that's good that, yeah. Cheers. People lipping in for just to disrupt our podcast. But not to worry, we're at the end anyway.
Be sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, where everyone's very mature.
Yes, that was Adam Nicholas. So go and harass him on the social media. But yes, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I have been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Rich.
Thank you very much for watching.
And joined by Josh.
Thank you very much for watching.
And goodbye. We'll catch you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.